Aloha, this is Fluid Floyd of Don Tiki.
Hi, this is Perry Como, also of Don Tiki.
And hi, this is Violetta Beretta, also of Don Tiki.
So, for people who don't know, what is Exotica?
You tell them, Fluid.
Is it okay to drink and during this interview?
How much rum is in that drink now?
Well, Exotica is an evocative genre of music that almost disappeared, that was created by the masters of Exotica, Martin Denny, Les Baxter, Arthur Lyman, back in the mid to late 50s, and it was a captivating sound that painted pictures in people's mind all over the world of what Hawaii must be like, this wonderful tropical paradise with jungle sounds and rainforests and waterfalls and a lovely place. So that was the soundtrack for statehood days.
And if you were to describe it to somebody who's never heard of it, would you say it's a lounge or is it, I mean, tropical?
Well, we always like to say it's jungle jazzy kind of a sound. When we say Exotica, a lot of people don't know what we're talking about, or we think it's music for strippers, which is...
There's no stripping involved.
Yeah, and as Martin Denny defined it to me once, is that he used some of his classical musical influences like Dvorak and Debussy that had this kind of romantic overlay with Polynesian rhythms and also Latin rhythms that Augie Colon brought to it. And they kind of created this whole new music of adventurous, dangerous, exotic music that played in the homes of suburbia across America, who wanted something a little more savage and primitive and, you know, blood pulsing for their backyard tiki parties.
So why was it almost lost?
Rock and roll took over and Uncle Marty had a number one hit, Quiet Village. I think it was, 1959, something like
that?
And then that was kind of the last time any kind of lounge music made it to that, as far as I know, to that extent, to be number one. Rock and roll pretty much took over, and it kind of went by the wayside. Because there's not much rock and roll involved in traditional Exotica.
I think also the instrumental nature of that type of music, you know, became less and less popular as we got things with, you know, lyrics like rock and roll or ballads or things like that.
So how did Don Tiki come to be? Well, give me a little bit of history on it.
Well, Don Tiki came to be, my day job is advertising, and I had a client who was a piano retailer, Ellen Masaki, who's like taught every child on this island how to play the piano, and she had recitals every Saturday where her students would perform in hopes of that they would buy a Steinway piano for their young genius. And Martin Denny was a signature Steinway piano player, and so he was at this recital and I was just in awe because I always loved his music, and he was very approachable and warm and a great raconteur. And when he told me his story, he hit the top of the charts in his 40s, top of Billboard charts for like a year. I kind of grabbed that information because I saw a great similarity in my close and dear friend, Kit Perry Como, who is much like Marty with, you know, perfect pitch and incredible piano player. And
I thought he called me a perfect bitch, but I'm getting my ears.
And I said, it's not too late for us to be rock stars, or at least lounge stars. And and Marty was very supportive, and he loved it. He always referred to us as the Don Tiki Orchestra, because we made it large with, you know, 10 musicians and gorgeous Polynesian dancers and costume changes and props, and we created a big show. His show was like a quartet or a quintet, so he really liked what we were up to. Plus, we added lyrics and vocals, which it was never part of the original Exotica guys. It was all instrumental music.
It was kind of this was like the mid-90s, right? Something like that. This happened. And at that time, actually, there was a little bit of a movement toward this music because Uncle Marty started getting some interest in younger people because of his LP covers that featured Sandy Weiner in all different kinds of costumes.
Yes.
Beautiful girl. And they bought the LPs for the look, and then they actually listened to it, and it sounded pretty good. And the Iona Pear Dance Theater played, there's some, one group actually went after the music and did very, very well. And that's a group called Combustible Edison out of Seattle, I think. And they, Iona Pear, used that. And at the same time that, Fluid Floyd was talking to me about the thing, this was happening too. And I'm going, wow, this is really good music. It's fun. And it can be, there's a lot of open-endedness about it, so you can do a lot of things with the concept. And I was afraid that every musician of a certain age would just grab onto this. So we tried to get our album out really, really fast. Turned out nobody else grabbed it, so we're the only ones. There was Waitiki was the only ones that came close, and they're more of a jam, kind of Latin jam band, actually.
Waitiki
Seven.
Seven.
Waitiki Seven, yeah. And they're a great band.
Yeah, we have overlap members, too. Yeah. You know, Abe Lagrimas Jr. Plays with them, as does Lapaka Cologne, yeah. Who does the congas and bongas and bird calls that, carrying on the tradition that his father, Augie, started with Martin. He was, Augie was with Martin for like 50 years. And that's kind of that unique element was kind of what put their music on the map.
So how long has this project been in the world?
Well, our first album came out in 97, I believe.
Yeah, it was like November 97. We started talking about it in 96.
Yeah, 96. Yeah, and then the second album came out in 2002, and at that time I was working as for John Hirakawa to do his new show, writing music for his new show, and the choreographer was Tunui Tully, who's a fantastic choreographer. And he asked, do I know Don Tiki, because he really liked the music, and I said, well, and so he wanted to do, we wanted to do a little kind of a record release party. We did it at the Hawaiian Hut, which was pretty much the only leftover
Tiki room
left, right? It was a beautiful room, beautiful room, great concept. Anyway, Tunui brought all these beautiful girls, and the thing was kind of a hit with people, and so we said, oh, maybe we should make a show out of it. That's a nightmare. But yeah, but it's not really a nightmare. It's actually.
So for people who don't know, what is tiki?
Well, tiki, you know, there's two tikis, actually. There's real tiki, you know, Bishop Museum, Big Island City of Refuge tiki. And we're very respectful of that. And then there's also pop culture marketing tiki that was used largely in the 50s and 60s, and there was a whole craze across America where all these places popped up. It started with Trader Vic's and Don the Beachcomber, which actually goes back to the 30s and 40s in Hollywood. And so we're part of the tiki pop culture fun movement, and there's, you know, that's been well documented in the Book of Tiki by Sven Kirsten and all of that. So we kind of are playing off of that.
And if I can just chime in a little bit, like, there's a lot of things that are, in terms of that pop culture, that are associated with the tiki lifestyle. So a lot of, you know, the fans will build their own tiki bars at home, concoct tiki drinks. There are huge tiki festivals held throughout the continental U.S., some of which we played at. And I think mostly what it is, you know, these people understand the difference between the Polynesian culture of tiki and the separate pop culture lane, and I think they're eager to understand both. But what they seem to want to do is to celebrate the memory that they had when they came here in the 60s, or the things that their grandfather told them about Hawaii at the time, things like that.
With that said, has there any been any backlash to what you're saying?
Actually, it seems like most of my Hawaiian friends, pretty much all of them, understand that they're just an entertainment, and they don't mind entertainment. They do it themselves. We're not trying to make a cult out of it or anything else like that. So they also, their parents knew the music and loved the music. So it's bringing back a music that brings a lot of nostalgia back for them as well. So if we've had a little bit of backlash, but actually not from the Hawaiian community.
Yeah, honestly, we were concerned about that. Our very first show, you know, I peeked out the curtains and I saw a lot of prominent Hawaiian performers there, and members of OHA board, and a lot of people that were friends of Kit, because he's got a studio downtown and he records a lot of their music. And I was kind of concerned, like, oh my, you've invited these people here. What are they gonna, you know, are they gonna think? And honestly, those are the people who like leapt up and gave us a huge embrace and said, totally get this, get the historical context. This is a lot of fun. This is the kind of shows that used to be in Waikiki when Don Ho and Martin Denny and Arthur Lyman all kind of ruled the roost down there. And Arthur Lyman, who started with Martin Denny, was a very handsome, regal Hawaiian man who played this music. He played vibraphones and was an incredible musician, and he branched out and had his own career, national career, playing this music, I think on Mercury Records or Liberty Records, one of those labels.
And then, with that said, I guess, how is it important for you as you carry on this tradition to get it right, considering you're picking up in the footsteps of Martin Denny?
Yeah, well, actually, we're going beyond Uncle Marty because times have changed, and there's a lot more music, different kinds of music that people are familiar with now. So we can bring those elements in. The constant elements are percussion, interesting percussion, not just ordinary percussion, but interesting percussion. Kind of a jazz approach to the harmonies, and a semi-humorous approach to the lyrics, so that there's very little serious stuff going on. I mean, we've done a couple of songs that address some more serious issues, but not really in the way that's browbeating people or knocking them over the head with it. So I think that is kind of what we go. A lot of Fluid Floyd and I are always talking about, is this tiki or is this not tiki? And, for instance, we're now kind of bringing, it requires a lot of jazz background for the musicians. Like, we've never really done a jazz show where we do extensive improvisation. This one's going to have some improvisation, and we're going to kind of show off the people. But we're going back and forth about the actual songs that we play, that we try to make it as close to exotica music as we can, but still be jazz in the, when we do the jazz, that jazz song. So it's kind of that way.
And then to kind of switch it over to, how did you get to incorporate dance into this?
Well, Uncle Marty used to bring a solo hula dancer with him when he went on the road. But Tunui just saw it, and he continues to see it. Tunui's, since that time, back in the turn of the 21st century, he's become a factor in Japan for his Tahitian halau. And he told me just a couple months ago that he's more and more certain that exotica music to dance to is the best music for dancers to learn, because it's so eclectic that they have to do a lot of different things. They can do a little ballet. We had Kamakoa do some ballet, kind of ballet-ish kind of things, tangos, any kind of Latin things, Polynesian, and anything, so that they get a lot of experience at dancing to different modes of music.
And then Violetta, now you're here.
And now I'm here. Yeah, I think, you know, throughout the years, and depending on the size of the show and the different, you know, themes or spaces available, there's been large crews of dancers, and we've been fortunate enough to have beautiful Tahitian dancing and stuff, like, from people that they've already mentioned, like Tunui. And then several different incarnations, like when we went on tour, you know, we had to sort of lessen the amount of people, so it ended up sort of just being me and then Sherry Shaoling, who also doubles as a vocalist, and so we picked up some of the slack in terms of vocals and also dancing. And I think it's more, you know, that the highlight and the showcase is the band and the musical talent, and so the dancers are just there to sort of highlight and play that up and make it even more of a fun experience for the audience.
Throughout, the common element in the dancing is kind of the fun thing. The costuming is always in the idea of kind of having a good time with it, and the dance moves are always fun, and that's carried on with Violetta and Sherry very, very much.
Oh, thank you. I've been working on a few headdresses for the gig, so hopefully we'll see some crazy costumes on stage.
So with that, for people who haven't seen it, like I always people always bring the lampshade. It's like a tiki lampshade come to life,
sure,
walking across the stage. So take us through things like that.
Well, I guess, you know, if I was going to have to try to describe this sort of show personally to a friend or something, I'd say, you know, imagine a backyard luau gone berserk. it, you know, you're going to hear some sounds and different things that, you know, you are familiar with in terms of exotica, but Don Tiki is also its own animal. So it brings to the table, like Kit said, a lot of humor, wackiness. We don't take ourselves very seriously, and so it's very kitschy and fun, and a little bit of, like, you know, not your grandmother's luau, is what I like to say. Yeah, so you'll see a lot of different costumes, a lot of variety in music, and, you know, showcasing jazz more this time around, but we definitely have a lot of different things and fun props and different people on stage.
So with that said, the upcoming show at the Blue Note, what can people kind of expect to pull out of that?
The primary thing is they'll be seeing the musical talent of several people that we haven't really featured before, but who were almost all of them have been part of the troupe in the past. Star Kalahiki, who won Best Jazz Vocalist of the Year, Most Promising Artist, a great singer, and she's going to kind of headline. And we have great improvisationists, Abe Labrinas, who's done a fantastic job for us always. He started off as a drummer when we went to Columbus, Ohio.
The very first live gig.
Yeah.
The Kahiki in Columbus, Ohio. Very exotic.
He's doing vibes, and he also plays a formidable ukulele. He played a guitar. When we did a show in front of a punk band, so at the end we did a Devo song to kind of show that, yeah, we can do this too. Nobody can see me with my thumbs in my ears.
Uncontrollable urge.
Yeah. So Abe held down the rock guitar. So he's an amazing musician. He'll be on vibes. This is the first time we're going to have the new kid in the block, Bonnie B, who's a drummer who's been around. And he worked for several years with Spyro Gyra. He's just an incredible musician. We're going to showcase him along with Mopaka. Mopaka and he will have a lot of, they love each other and they have a lot of things to say musically to each other. And Mark Tanoli, we weren't able to bring Heijong over because of the nature of the finances, actually. A lot of our members are on the mainland, so we have to be careful about that sort of thing. But we do have Mark Tanoli, who's just an incredible soloist, and he'll be on the bass, so he'll be doing that, and we'll be seeing a lot of him too.
And then the stage show too, the dancing?
Yeah, intermittent dancing throughout. I think Star, you know, will definitely be doing vocals, and then we'll have some instrumentals, and then some feature dancing at certain select pieces.
And the Blue Note is kind of, they're strict with time.
Right.
Yeah,
we're doing two shows nightly, so they're at 7 and 9:30. So depending on their restrictions, I think each set's going to be like an hour and 15 to an hour and a half.
Yeah, I think it's an hour and 15.
Yeah, and then they need to clear the room and get ready for the next set.
Yeah. And by the way, both sets are different. So anybody wants to stick around?
We have different sets.
Because we play so seldom, we want to play a lot of songs. So it's a conscious decision to both sets.
Out of the Blue Note show, what do you want people to kind of take away from it?
That they just had a really, really great time. They learned about a new genre of music that overlaps into their jazz fandom, hopefully. Yeah, well, we hope to transport you to a tropical, sensual island of your fantasies.
I get transported to that all the time.
Yeah.
When we play, so it's not so hard. Not so hard as they say.
But Kit wrote a beautiful song called "The Other Side of the Moon," and lyrically we're talking about escaping to where no one can find you, kind of a thing. So that's what we hope people would be taken by our music, by our gorgeous dancer, by Blue Note strong drinks to a place that takes them out of their ordinary life.
Yeah.
And I'm really looking forward to hearing Star Kalahiki. She is, amazing performer, especially amazing local performer who is, really worthy of supporting. She's really great. Of course, all the Don Tiki musicians, some of them, all of them in my mind, are world class. And I think our audiences are just really fun people. They're lighthearted. They want to come out and have a good time and enjoy themselves. And so that's what we're going to try and provide them is a nice night to have, three nights of sheer enjoyment.
I got an island in the Pacific. and everything about it is terrific. I get the sun to tan me, palms to fan me, and on occasion a man. I love my island, it's very lazy. If I should ever leave it, I'd be crazy. I got papayas, peaches, sandy beaches, and on occasion a man. When I go swimming, I am always dressed in style. 'Cause I go swimming wearing just a great big smile. My little island, it's made for pleasure, and in the cool of evening it's a treasure. And when the day grows later, what is greater than